Good morning, everyone. And we are continuing with giving our attention to the essays in the externalization of the hierarchy. We began on approximately page 61. Let's see, what was it called? Yeah, it was called the immediate task. Okay, and this was at the threshold of the Second World War, a continuing war, really, that had gone underground, as the Tibetan tells us, and we wonder whether it's underground now, even, this great battle between the dweller on the threshold of humanity and the higher nature of humanity. DK is talking about how he has handled his various groups and how there may be one member in every group, maybe in a way a testing member, whose difficulties are of a more serious nature than those of the other members, because they constitute a detriment to the group life, providing as they do entrance for forces which do most definitely hold back the flow of spiritual life and prevent the work of a group nature moving forward into accomplishment and to accomplishment. In these cases, what can I do? So that's where we paused, and he was going to tell us what it is he can do or does do. This is then the beginning of our third program on page 65. First of all, he says, excuse me, I must exert infinite patience and give to each person full time for change. Well, I guess maybe we can question the use of the word infinite, but you know, a great deal of patience, because he realizes how slowly true change does occur. He says, this indeed, this I have done for years in some cases. I guess there's been the case of LTSK, that third ray soul that was highly glamored. There was the case of LUT, who had his own difficulties, and others. This I have done for years in some cases, and have thereby taxed the patience of the group members who were not implicated in the particular situation and weakness, and who longed to begin to group work. Well, you see, the real group work had not yet begun, and fortunately or unfortunately, it had to be delayed maybe for a lifetime because of the very difficult problems internationally, with war on the horizon and an aggressive Germany, an aggressive Japan, and Italy brought into the question. The conditions of the attack of the Black Lodge through the Axis powers had become so severe that this specialized group work, I think, could not be continued. Anyway, there were those who, after many years, even from 1931 perhaps, 32, 33, and here it is already 1938 in this discussion, they longed to begin the group work. And instead, they were still involved in getting the group into condition. And I suppose many of us who have worked with groups know that we cannot simply plunge into full efficacy with regard to any group, but certain things have to be taken care of in group adjustment. So the lesson of patience has not been lost, And I would remind the group members that if they ever hope to have hierarchical standing, they must learn that love and that patience, they must learn that love and that patience which can wait, thinking no evil and fostering only good. I'm reminded of Siddhartha, you know, in a story by a novel by Hermann Hesse. What are his accomplishments? He says, excuse me, I can think, I can fast, I can wait. And patience is one of the highest expressions of the will. And so often, you know, it is personal ambition which does not want to wait. I'm making a little adjustment here, so the desire to get ahead, not only for the group but for oneself. So sometimes it is a necessary discipline to which group members have to be subjected. So again, you know, as with everything said to the group members, we put ourselves to the test, and do we have this capacity to love, to be patient, to wait, and without a critical mind, thinking only the good, fostering only the good. I made clear to you this year that a drastic reorganization might be in order. Well, indeed it came in late 1939, and this was perhaps correlated with the unabashed aggression of Germany with regard to Poland in September of 1939. I made clear to you this year that a drastic reorganization might be in order, and that groups might have to be rearranged somewhat before the united group work could be carried forward. So, you know, maybe this is the anticipation, the harbinger of the reorganized C group of 24. This reorganization seems now to me to be unavoidable. It is not final. It does not touch the enduring, unchanging relation which has been established and which will persist among all of you eternally. Eternally. Nothing can basically separate you. So a very strong relation into the future, into future incarnations, has been established. And we recall that DK told us the C group project is a 275 year project. Basically, he had to eliminate certain people. There were already at this point about 36 people, or maybe if we add in the political workers, three of whom had been gathered, maybe there were 39, and a C group of 24 was necessary. So some had to be discontinued in this work. The objective of the work of these C groups is to familiarize people with the hierarchical plan as it is working out today in this time of crisis. And I think we can all admit how very little people think that there is a hierarchical plan, and if they do think so, the word plan terrifies them, because they think they will somehow lose their freedom and be captured by a new world order which will somehow enslave them. So we have to, you know, convey to people this plan of light, of love, and of acquiescence to the will of our planetary God. But then the structure of our planet and of the solar system and its livingness and the whole hierarchy of ever greater beings has to be presented and shown to be convincing. We have a lot of labor, educative labor, ahead of us, and during the time of the third installment, which will begin in another 6 or 7 years, I think we have our work cut out for us. So, can people be familiarized with hierarchical planets? Certainly wasn't the plan of Germany dominant over all other nations and enslaving them. In these last three words, time of crisis, you have the theme which is of paramount importance to you at this time. And, you know, the question arises, are we still in a time of crisis? In many ways, it seems so, with democracy being challenged. DK warned about the latent fascistic nature of the United States, and I suppose within humanity, fascism is not dead. Okay, so he says, is this theme, the time of crisis, paramount in your mind? Is it? Is it of paramount importance to you? Is it really? And we can question ourselves. We have our own petty pursuits, normal pursuits, and yet we are in a time of huge transition from Pisces to Aquarius and the preservation of values. It is the theme of the political workers, of the initiates on the first ray. The preservation of values is of utmost importance. We see in a number of nations hard-won values going down in preference to older methods which have demonstrated that they do not work. Okay. Your work is partly to dispel illusion, but primarily to impress the plan upon the consciousness of the leading people in the world. Now, you know, maybe he would be talking especially to the telepathic communicators when he says something like this. In our thought, we too seek to impress aspects of the plan, as much as we can understand, upon the consciousness of leading people in the world. This we do with our thought power and not by having real-world conversations with them. It has seemed to us that this crisis is more keenly realized by worldly people than it is by world aspirants, who do have a slight vision of the objectives. Now, this is an analysis which probably was not welcome to those reading these words. Is it still true of us? Do we realize the nature of the time of crisis in which we are living, and are we working to offset it? Those who are not oriented to the spiritual hierarchy and to the path are now largely dedicated to activities of a world nature, either good or what you call bad, and this is not true of the world aspirants. In other words, he's saying the world aspirants are not thinking in world terms. But here, We have the final years of the era of the forerunner, John the Baptist. As you know, he went everywhere, basically speaking of the existence of the Christ, or of Jesus, who was anointed as the Christ. They, instead of working actively to bring about the accomplishment of the ends indicated by the plan, which are of a spiritual nature and unifying in their effect, breeding not hatred and separativeness, but world understanding and fusion, he's talking to us now, spend their time in speculation, in criticism of the various world leaders, and in fearful foreboding, none of which is in the least helpful, and in the last analysis is definitely harmful. Well, that is a indictment. That's an indictment of all of us, I say. And after the war, it was that DK said that there might be a reversion to a very beginning of humanity, and that humanity as it exists now might be destroyed. That was after the war. Are we still in such a situation with the advances going on in weaponry and in international misunderstanding? Okay. So they are instead, they spend their time in speculation, in criticism, in fear. It's not helpful. It's actually harmful. This harmfulness is due to a powerfully directed thought form constructed by men and women of a certain aptitude in spiritual achievement. So today, as we watch, for a while anyway, Democracy Challenged and the rising of those who have dictatorial tendencies, considering their own ego above all values, we have to ask how to deal with them. And I would say, you know, the assertion of that which is good, rather than the direct criticism of that which is found wanting, is something that recommends itself to us. Sometimes, you know, being an American, and when I think of the values of such a racial avatar as Abraham Lincoln, his breadth of vision, his synthetic understanding, his compassion, his fortitude, and all that. And then I contrast it with our present politicians and even the present president. The gulf is very great. We need to reestablish the values by which a nation can truly advance and build its causal body. We need to think in broad terms. But of course, at the end of an age, and as we fade rapidly into the beginning of a new one, there is a deterioration of values of the past. There is a falling down of the form, and there is a lowering of the vibration. There is a lowering of aspiration. There is a tendency to return to tangibility, to material values. I think in the world, humanity is witnessing this now, and I think it will take the remainder of the age of Pisces, which is said to last until 2117, to be rid of this national deterioration and the deterioration of humanity's objectives. because humanity is rapidly falling into fear on the threshold of the new. We must be sure that we do not fall into such a condition. Now, this applies no matter when it's written, you know. It can be 1938 or it can be now, 2019. The responsibility of thought is little grasped as yet by those who are numbered among world aspirants. And their thought-making activity is now either definitely constructive or potentially destructive. So we have to take this very seriously, because some of the things that are going on now easily arouse antipathy, even in those who should know better and who should know that hate must be avoided. Firm understanding must take its place, and a consecration to values which really reflect the soul. I think, you know, in a way here, we're being scolded just a little. And we have to be very careful as aspirants, because our thought is more powerful than that of the average individual and can do more for good or for harm than the thought process, undisciplined thought process, let us say, of the average individual. He says, I hesitate to enlarge upon this theme owing to probable personality reactions which those who read my words may generate. So what is our reaction when he is telling us that we don't think broadly enough? We, in our criticism and in our fear and in our speculations, are rather useless and maybe even negative. What are our reactions when we hear this? Do we say, it was written a long time ago, so it doesn't apply to us? Or do we find ourselves misunderstood or even chastised? Or do we stop thinking of ourselves and get onto the task of thinking in broad terms in line with the plan? It says, I am therefore speaking here of the world in general, and not so specifically of the world aspirants and the pledged workers. Okay, well, now that was the conclusion of section one. And I could have begun at the beginning of the book, but have chosen to do it this way, you know, taking us to the eve of the Second World War, when there was an invasion into Czechoslovakia to liberate the German-speaking people there. I guess that was the justification used. And when there was the annexation of Austria, all of those things were allowed to pass. It was naked aggression, really. I guess we, as members of humanity, are so fortunate to have come out of that Second World War with humanity intact and with a new possibility offered to us. And we have to do all we can to assure that humanity makes the most of this new possibility. Already we do see the signs of decadence, deterioration, which is inevitable to a certain extent at the change of ages, but we cannot allow a fall, either in our life or in the wider picture. working with the power of thought, which is very powerful indeed. The power of meditation, the process of meditation to offset these seeming deteriorations. Well, now we will go on into section two, and as I said, if all goes well, I will recapture section one when this is all over. The importance of the work we're doing is to see how certain historical trends established when humanity really began to face its dweller have led to situations today. Basically, we're in a battle against human selfishness, which is natural enough, but should now have been outlived in the lives of millions and millions of people. And we have to learn how to live the unselfish life, which cares more about the whole than it does about that little part which so often we mistakenly consider to be ourselves. Yes, the issue of identity lies underneath everything. So this is how DK was seeing this in 1938, I suppose, 1939. This is the general world picture at that time. It's all part of the world picture in which we are living. And remember, you know, here we've had this annexation of Austria and the period of the invasion of Czechoslovakia, taking that over, a great avidity for conquest and for, you know, Lebensraum and a greater Germany. It's egoism on a national level. And it was greatly expanded, greatly stimulated by the negative forces. As a matter of fact, you know, we're told that the major leaders of the Nazi group were actually obsessed by powerful dark entities. So, you know, who was really doing, who was really speaking? And when those entities saw there was no use and the war was going to be lost, they withdrew, leaving the individuals involved alone and none of them psychologically normal. So here we are in these fateful days, September 1938. It's about a year before England declared war and other allies of Poland declared war on the Third Reich and Germany. In giving these instructions, I am anxious for you clearly to comprehend the end I have in view. It's amazing, isn't it, about the Tibetan that he can speak of technically of such occult things and yet be so very practical and so very simple in dealing with what must be done in humanity at this time. I sincere students and disciples must hold ever before them the idea of service. That's the third law of the soul, we know. The law of service, it can be more powerful even than meditation in many instances. And it draws forth the power of the soul when the human being is witnessed by the solar angel as in the state of extremity, as service is attempted. Then the interest of the Silver Angel is really drawn out, and then real assistance comes in enriching that service and making it more effective. In connection with our present theme, this is political service along the line of world planning and world government. You know, these words, of course, scare many people because they are still egotistical on the personal and even on the national level. This teaching will carry to the general public some idea of the trend of human destiny where nations and larger groups are concerned, and should give a conviction of hierarchical potency and a sense of illumination. I think very important for human beings to have that they realize the hierarchy stands, and that behind their efforts is a great defending wall, a great heart center with the power of prevision and a total commitment to the welfare of the planet through the plan, and to the welfare of of humanity. So this teaching will carry to the general public some idea of the trend of human destiny. Even the masters don't know how exactly it will work out at what time. They know how it will work out eventually. The trend of human destiny where nations and larger groups are concerned, and should give conviction of the hierarchical potency and a sense of illumination. Well, to work with confidence, work with power, work with persistence, I think we do need this conviction. It will, however, do this far more easily if the ideas I attempt to convey are backed by the understanding thought and the intelligent mental cooperation of a group of people who have pondered deeply on the theme. And this is why it's given to the aspirants first, so that they may convey to others in a manner that others can understand the fundamental principles regarding the subject that the Tibetan is trying to make clear. The future of humanity, the trend of human destiny, what it is hoped by the hierarchy that humanity will achieve. What is our theme? A study and an analysis from the esoteric angle of the social organization of humanity. I seek to have you grasp some of the universal implications which the signs of the times portray, and not be entirely engrossed with the immediate situation or dilemma. So he's asking here, you know, for the long-range vision, because that can be so helpful. And when we become upset and unbalanced because of the immediate threat of the immediate situation, we lose our power. Too close a perception and too near a point of view does not tend to true understanding. He's making the case here, isn't he, for the distant vision, you know, the distant vision of what we're all working for. It fails, for one thing, to indicate the particular place in the general world picture which the immediate happenings outline. So, you know, we might say, what is the significance of the immediate happenings? And if we look too closely and become too alarmed or too destabilized by the immediate problems, then we lose perspective. So Above all things, as aspirants and disciples, let us attempt to cultivate an intelligent spiritual perspective. We're still involved in that. We have not entered the Aquarian Age. You know, what is expected for humanity, on behalf of humanity, through the agency of humanity, or as it says in the Agni Yoga books, what is expected when human hands and human feet do the necessary work to lift humanity out of its quite negative condition, which has been prevalent for a long time. It is a platitude and a truism to state that humanity is today passing through a crisis of immense proportions. And I want to say, in my opinion at least, that passage is not over. We cannot say, the Second World War has been won. The Great War, 1914 to 45, has been won, and a crisis is no longer the issue. No, we are, as the Christ comes closer, the crisis within many of us and within many groups within humanity will intensify. Now, what are the causes of this crisis of immense proportions? I think, you know, it's such a statement that it's worth expanding it a bit, and that we can do in, that's not what I hoped for. We'll see if this will work. Crisis of immense proportions. Okay. The causes of this crisis must be sought in many factors. And of course, if we hope to work intelligently, causes must be understood. They lie in the past, in the growth through evolution of certain basic tendencies in man, in past mistakes, present opportunities, and the powerful activity of the hierarchy of love. What we have there is a crisis with multiple causes. A crisis with multiple causes. Let's see if I... Yeah. It's hard for me to resist writing down. It does slow us down a bit, but maybe it helps make things clear. The future, he, you know, sometimes calls it the wonder of the new age. The future is of great promise, provided man can learn the lessons of the present, which have been closely presented to him. He must accept them and understand clearly the nature of his problem and of the crisis, with its many ramifications and various implications. It touches upon many aspects of human, yes, and planetary life. Now, remember, this is being written before the second part of the Great War broke out in full fury. The seething turmoil in which the masses of the people are now living, and the emergence of one or two key people in every nation, have a close relationship. Now, you know, in the Atlantean War, in the Atlantean War, the same key people were involved. Maybe there were many wars in Atlantis, but we hear of the great battle, of which the Battle of Kurukshetra is perhaps a historical documentation and certainly a symbol. These key people make their voices heard and evoke attention. Their ideas are followed, rightly or wrongly, with attention, appreciation, or distrust. Even then in Germany, there was much distrust of what the Nazis were putting forward. And there were some Nazis that were just so crude and terrible in their presentation that even the rank and file of the Nazis rejected them. Well, evil has had its great externalizing effect within humanity. The slow and careful formation of the new group of world servers is indicative of this crisis, of the crisis. They are overseeing or ushering in the new age and are present at the birth pangs of the new civilization. So let us say that pain. Okay, let's see if I can. Yeah, we don't want that. That pain is inevitable. I'm not sure what's going on here, but I hope not what I think. P-A-I-N is inevitable. And the coming into manifestation of a new race, characterized by the seventh ray, I would say, a new culture and a new world outlook. Well, you know, the sixth sub-race of the fifth, that's the anticipation of the coming in of the sixth, the root race. Rays 2, 4, 6 will be very important in that root race, but so for the time being in this transition period, will the seventh ray be of importance. The work is necessarily slow, and those of you who are immersed in the problems and the pains find it hard to view the future with assurance or to interpret the present with clarity, you know. I mean, how many of us are absolutely certain about what's really happening? How much of the divine plan do we really know? How much do we imagine? We have a superficial knowledge of it, really, but if we stay close to the great invocation and evoke, whenever possible, spiritual light, spiritual love, and a spiritual sacrificial will, then we will be on the beam, and at least the essence of the plan will characterize our efforts. I've listed some of the reasons for the present world unrest in another book. We'll have to take that up at some point if we can, Education in the New Age. Reminding you that some of the causes lie in so remote a past that history, at least our history, knows nothing of them. I mean, just think that early Atlantean days occurred 12 million years ago. Maybe the Great War, a decisive war in some ways, was occurring 4 million years ago. Our history is going back, you know, some tens of thousands of years, and then great gaps exist about which we know nothing. You would find it useful to reread those few pages at this point, for in them I sought to give some insight into the essential situation which confronts mankind due to certain evolutionary developments. So here we are, members of humanity, and we want to know the general situation in which we are living, the point of reached by humanity itself. I suppose it's an evolutionary point, and you know, the opportunity with regard to the fifth kingdom presents itself. The emergence of the new racial type, anticipated now with the sixth sub-race of the fifth root race and the impending sixth root race, the end of the Piscean Age, not only of the lesser Piscean Age of some, well, it depends how you calculate it, 2160 years or 2500 years, and the greater, also ending before long, at a time that our science, our knowledge cannot calculate, he tells us, and the incoming of two Aquarian ages, one the smaller Aquarian age, probably incoming technically in the year 2117, when the previous influences will have subsided or in a way be out of incarnation, although the rays never are out of incarnation in a larger sense, and the beginning of the 25,000 year Aquarian age, a great Plutonic year. We barely touched upon the fourth point, and I am not enlarging at length upon it here either, fascinating as speculation might be, because I'm anxious to have its major characteristics, those of unity and synthesis. You know, it is, after all, the sign of universality, Aquarius is that, stand out with clarity in your minds. We really are on the threshold of the new, no question about it. It gives the clue to all that is happening today in the world of politics and international governments, and accounts for the trend towards synthesis, amalgamation, affiliation, you know. And it is very fitting, is it not, that in 1945, I think it was, this great extraplanetary being, the avatar of synthesis, made contact with our planetary logos and has been powerfully effective in moving things along towards synthesis, amalgamation, and affiliation. Of course, it could be for better or for worse, depending on how humanity responds. The remaining four causes, which we will consider later, might be enumerated as possible. So these are evolutionary developments, and these are the conditions in which mankind lives at this point. There's an evolutionary point for humanity. There's a new race in the making. Two types of ages are ending, one smaller, one larger, and two types are beginning, and what else? Okay, here are other causes. The time of the end, the judgment of people. The period of judgment is a group interlude to the full emergence of the new age influence. I guess influences, you know, Libra is emerging in the planetary horoscope, and Libra is the sign of judgment. Okay. Well, that's one indication at least. We are in the end times. Now, oh, so many people have so little idea of continuity and of a future for humanity that they want to see it all rather ended and the good whisked up to heaven and the bad sent to hell, you know, and it's all over. But there's much more to it in reality. And this end time presages a beginning time, and a time that will allow us to continue the evolution of our planetary globe and chain and the evolution of our planetary scheme. All of these being necessary evolutions and outside the consideration of the vast majority of human beings. As educators, maybe we can do something about that. So what else is happening here? The leveling of all classes and distinctions, which is very, that's a very Aquarian thing, you know. This is an Aquarian tendency. So that the spiritual values may appear and the spiritual hierarchy manifest on Earth. So democracy, very important, because it is the hierarchical way of government rather than monarchy representing Shambhala and so forth, dictatorship representing Shambhala. The fact of the approach of the hierarchy towards external contact with humanity, this must be understood in a sane manner. And I would suggest that you read my earlier writings on the great approaches. Well, you know, I do wish that we had a chance to review all these many writings of the Tibetan together. It probably, you know, cannot take place. It's just too voluminous. But I trust that you look at penetration into the Tibetan's books as a huge opportunity, and that without being forced to do so, you will undertake the reading and assimilation of those books. It's really the only way to bring the second installment into your consciousness in a clear and detailed manner. And then, you know, perhaps some of these discussions, these video commentaries will also be of use, especially once you have some familiarity with the basic presentation of the Tibetan. And then the eighth factor, the power and significance, even politically considered, of the great invocation, you know, changing nations and governments. We do live in a period of, fervent belief by some and often agnosticism by many others, and atheistic disbelief by so many. And the truer picture presented by theosophy, by the ageless wisdom, is not universally held. This is our task, to bring this point of view into the consciousness of the intelligent human beings, and to a degree of those who are aspiring towards intelligence. Most of humanity right now is still rather camomanassically focused or emotionally focused. So these are reasons for the present world unrest. And we have to realize, you know, it's really unavoidable. We have no possibility of evading this remarkable turn of affairs within humanity. The past, even a past rooted in the previous solar system, is coming to fruition. And even certain rebellions that occurred there, and a lack of alignment between the efforts of the previous solar system and this one, even the lack of alignment between certain stars, are involved in all of the turmoil that we have been experiencing and are experiencing. So just as long as we hold in our consciousness the idea of multiple causation, it's not just one thing that has delivered the difficulty, delivered the turbulence, not just one thing. And even the good things which are on the horizon can be causes of unrest. We might say that even the good can cause unrest in humanity. Okay, well, I'm going to try to, for a little while, make these programs, of a certain length, maybe an hour's length here, but other times I may find it best to make longer programs. So we have a few minutes here, and we have the beginning of a section called The Hidden Source of Outer Turmoil. Well, we've already seen there are a number of sources. How much deeper can we go? Obviously, you know, something has to be understood in this nature. What's happening on our planet is not just all about humanity. We are very anthropocentric. We center our conscious considerations upon ourselves, our smaller groups, and maybe humanity. But there are many kingdoms in nature, some of which we have contact with and others of which are too high for us to really register. And there is the will of a great evolving being called a planetary logos, who is in a process of initiation under the jurisdiction of a still greater God called the Solar Logos. And on his own level, he has achievements which must be wrought out in order to uphold the plan for the entire solar system. And the developments for humanity are incidental in this process. If we can only get a sense of scale. At one point, the Tibetan refers to microscopic man. And we're so used to thinking of ourselves as the center that we don't realize, perhaps, how very small we are. You know, when you look at a tiny microbe, that's what we are to certain great beings. And when you look at subatomic particles, atoms, subatomic particles, even smaller, we are that to even larger beings. And what are we to the great God of the universe, whom we essentially are, but, you know, in our attenuated circumstance, we have emanated forth into great circumscription, into great containment. And what is our scope there? We don't really have a sense of scale, not sufficiently. And if we did have that sense of scale, our sense of values would be adjusted, because we'd know what is little and what is big and what is important and what is not. So a lot of our work here is developing a right sense of values, which will allow us to function more intelligently in line with greater plans than our own. It's all a big alignment exercise. In a way, our education has to do with alignment. And the more we align with the higher powers of goodness, the more we will know what it is right and fitting for us to do. But this, of course, requires a reduction in our sense of false identity and egoism and egotism. Those factors have to be reduced so that we can have the sense of our identity expanding into larger arenas, because after all, one day the limitations will be removed and we will discover ourselves to be life itself. But right now we have, according to our very own plan, certain things to be worked out in a very circumscribed environment. But if we realize that we have been through this process infinitudinously, always more than one can specify with a definite number, perhaps we will seize joyously upon the occasion and engage ourselves in the creative work which we ourselves have preordained when we were completely identified with and as the great universal logos. There's really no difference between that great being and what we are, and even now we are there as that great being. You know, things are interesting and confusing when you start talking about identity, but we are both. So, okay, what I'd like to do here is just, yes, we began on page 65, and I'm not quite sure where we are now. It could be page, I don't know. Is it 69? I hate to go there, you know, to try to find out what it is, but I guess I have no choice. Okay. Well, it's page 71, isn't it? Okay. So we've looked at page 65 to 71. Okay. And now we're going to set up our next discussion, which will be the fourth program. Always in the beginning, it seems to move so slow, and then later, a lot has been accomplished. So, here we are. Oops. Okay, now I have it set up, and we're ending program three, and we ended that on the 9th of January. And we're going to begin with program four. We don't know on what date. So let me just say this, that even though we're dealing with historical factors, the Tibetan is constantly inserting that which applies to every disciple in training. And we have to have the sense of continuity, which helps us to bridge from the factors that he is explaining to factors that exist today in the year 2019 and determine human relations and international relations and the general state and potentials and dangers which face humanity. Okay, so we'll move on to number four when I can do this. Okay, let's think deeply about how we can be of use to humanity and the planet in line with the divine plan at this time.